Bart Bouchatz and not Alison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted over at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. It's Sunday, the 27th of August, 2008. This is show number 162. Do you know something? I had no idea how hard it was to record an intro. I must have redone that thing about 20 times, and it still doesn't sound great compared to Alison's, so I guess practice makes perfect. Those 161 times didn't go to waste. Anyway, I'm 30 seconds in and I've already gained an awful lot of extra respect for Alison, and you're probably wondering what kind of an amateur you have hosting the show. Anyway, hopefully Alison is now sunning herself in Cancun and having a great time. Hopefully she's not worrying about what I'm doing to her precious podcast. My little thought for the day, the NoSillaCast is called the NoSillaCast because it's Alison backwards. Most intelligent. So, I guess for today, it's the Trabcast, which is Bart backwards. Anyhow, before going any further, I would like my ego stroked or massaged or whatever, and come to the rescue, we have Rose from Hobart.
G'day Bart, this is Rose from Hobart. Not Jane from Perth, Rose from Hobart. This is just a short little soundbite. I just wanted to tell you and the listeners that Jane's invented a new word. We no longer edit our photos, we Bart our photos. So you've entered the lexicon. So, to paraphrase your Bartliness, until next time, happy snapping.
Cool, thanks Rose, that's so cool. That's made my day. I've now been promoted from being a rapid area transit system in San Francisco to a verb for editing photographs. Verbs are definitely better than trains. Thank you. Anyway, so, apart from me getting my ego massaged or stroked or whatever, what else have we got on the show today? You get to hear more of me. Sorry about that. I talk about some iPhone apps I actually like. Hopefully they're ones that everyone else hasn't been talking about, so it's actually original content. Let me see, what else have we got? There's chit-chat across the pond with myself and, as Alison would call him, crazy listener James, but I'm renaming him. He's lovely listener James, because he's lovely. I swear, he is lovely. So that's at the end of the show. Then before that, we have another nice piece from Jane. Not Rose. Jane. So without further ado, I think I'll hand over to... Let me see, me first or Jane first? Ladies first. Hand over to Jane.
Hi, Alison. Or Bart, depending on whether Alison is still luxuriating in magnificent Mexico or not. It's Jane from Perth. Today, instead of camera or iPhone ramblings, I'd like to review a small application that I use many times a day and may be well known by most listeners, but I still think it's worth a mention for those who aren't aware of it. It's a plug-in for the Safari web browser called Inquisitor, developed by David Watanabe and is available from inquisitorx.com. It does a great job of speeding up web searches and weighs in at a very low 28 kilobytes. This application, or should that be plug-in? I'm not sure of the correct technical term here. Anyway, this application has already been mentioned on the NoSillaCast, but that was a year ago, and there may be some listeners who aren't aware of Inquisitor. You know, when I decided to review Inquisitor, I had to check on Alison's site to make sure that it hadn't been mentioned just a few weeks ago, and that I wasn't going to make a fool of myself by talking about something already reviewed in much better detail than I could do. So I searched the NoSillaCast site and promptly lost an hour of my day by becoming totally absorbed in reading the show notes from older episodes. So a warning here, don't go there. You will lose years of your life reading stuff that you'd completely forgotten about. Right, now let's get back on track here. Inquisitor has been part of my daily web searching since it was released in version 3 at the end of 2006. It neatly buries itself inside the Spotlight search field at the top right-hand corner of the Safari window, where it announces its existence by displaying the word Inquisitor in greyed-out text. I like the way it's so unobtrusive and is simplicity itself. Just type in your search word or phrase in the Spotlight window, and Inquisitor will auto-complete the text, trying its darndest to predict what you're going to type. And Inquisitor does quite a decent job of its predictions, but this is a feature that can be switched off in preferences if you wish. Having entered your search word, there then appears a cool black drop-down list of websites and suggested search words. Clicking on any of the suggested websites will take you directly to that website. Or, if an appropriate site isn't listed there, then click on the suggested word that will take you to the Google page of search results for that word. More on that Google search business later. After installing Inquisitor, Safari gains another tab on its preferences window, named, appropriately, Search. On this Search tab, there are a multitude of new options to be considered and chosen. Now, here is where I show myself up as someone who just gets on with using software and doesn't always go digging around to see what tweaks can be made. And that's where I let myself down, because it was only last week when fiddling around with Safari, trying to get the RSS reader to do something, that I noticed that extra Search tab sitting there, waiting to be clicked upon. So I did, and there I found many decisions to be made about how Inquisitor was to conduct its searches and display its results. I won't list them here for fear of overstepping my time limitation of 4 minutes. Now remember, I mentioned there would be more on that Google search later. Well, here it is. Within the Inquisitor preferences, there is a drop-down list enabling you to choose between Google and Yahoo as your search engine of choice. But, more importantly for your non-US residents, there is a long list of country-specific Yahoo and Google search sites to choose from, thus producing country-specific results, a very handy feature for me. Hey, there's even a Google Ireland just for Bart. So, although Inquisitor is a seemingly basic plugin that produces the same search results as Google would, I find that its interface, right there on the Safari window, and the intelligent suggestions for websites that it makes, all add up to a really useful, time-saving little plugin. Oh, and of course, it's free! So those of you who haven't tried it yet, go download it today and see what it can do for you. Cheers, everyone, and see you later.
Thanks for that, Jane. And I just learned something new. That cool jingle you hear at the end of Jane's stuff? Alison doesn't do that. Jane does that. Yay! Less work for me. Anyway, thank you very much, Jane. I always forget that you can have sort of plug-in-y things for Safari, and I never think of it, so thanks for the reminder, and thanks for the good review. Now, when I opened the show, I said that we were going to have a whole bunch of stuff, and I completely left one out, and, well, I don't want to go back and re-record. So, without further ado, I'm now going to hand us over to the section which I'd forgotten about.
Dumb.
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 Dumb questions.
Dumb questions. Dumb questions.
Good one. What is?
How come I always have to?
It's time for Dumb Question Corner.
Not really so much a question corner this week, but more of a question cornerette. I have just one question, and it wasn't even technically addressed to me, but I'm going to answer it anyway. So our one and only question comes from listener Debbie T. She starts, I have a question, and maybe you could use it for Dumb Question Corner. Indeed I can. But in trying to figure out the OpenDNS stuff, I went through the process of changing my router's DNS to their numbers, and then I signed up for an account. They have software to download. Is this something I need, or would changing the router be enough? I also added the network to my account, but I don't know if that's enough. I feel so lost. Ack, help Alison. Well, with any luck, Alison is now lying in the pool with a nice cocktail or something, so we're going to have to make do with my answer instead. So, let's start backpedaling a little. What does DNS do and how does it work? All of your computers in your home network use your router to connect to the internet. And that router does more than just connect them to the internet. It also has what's called a DHCP server. So when you turn your computer on, you don't have to actually tell it what its IP address is or any of its network configuration settings. It simply comes on, sends out a general DHCP request to the whole network, which the router gets, and the router answers and says, here's a new IP address, use me as your DNS server, and it may send out some other information as well. But the two it's definitely going to give out is, use this IP address, and use me as your DNS server. So in your entire network, everything that wants to look up a URL and get it to an IP address will talk to your router. Your router, of course, does not have all these answers. Couldn't possibly have all these answers. So it needs to use DNS servers to get the answer. One server would in fact be enough, but because DNS is so unbelievably important, I mean without DNS you simply cannot use the internet, you generally, most routers will allow you to have two or maybe even three DNS servers. So if one goes belly up, it'll fall back on the other one. So the chances are you have two, and OpenDNS gives you two IP addresses to two of their servers. So once you've made that change, everyone using DNS on your network is going to ask the router, and the router is going to ask OpenDNS. So as far as protecting you from the nasty DNS vulnerability we talked about 2 weeks ago in Chit Chat Across the Pond, that's it, you're done, all covered, all well. OpenDNS, of course, can do way more than just simple plain old DNS, because since every time you try to go to a website you need to use DNS, your DNS server can be quite intelligent about things, and that's where all the other fancy features come into it. But, you know, they're completely 100% optional. If you're interested in what they can do, and probably some of the most useful things they can do is filtering types of domains or whitelisting and blacklisting specific domains, so this is probably of most interest in a family or perhaps a school or a work environment, where you may want to ensure that your young darlings behave themselves when they're out on the intertubes. If you're interested in how all this stuff works, I'm not going to explain it because I actually don't use it because I'm an adult and there's only adults living in my house and I don't care about censoring stuff. But if I had kids, I'd probably think about things very differently. Anyway, like I say, if you want a good tutorial on this, then I'm going to send you over to a competing podcast. Ooh, Alison may kill me for this. But anyway, I'm going to send you over to Victor Cahayao's site, because on Victor's site, one of Victor's great contributors, George Starcher, has done a three-part video tutorial on OpenDNS. And I'm going to stick those three links into the, what I'm sure will be very sparse, show notes for this show. Okay, that covers us for this week's Dumb Question Cornerette. If you have any dumb questions, email them to Alison, and I'm sure normal service will be resumed next week. I'm not big on coming up with intelligent segues, so I'm now going to hand you over from me to me, where I'm going to talk about iPhone apps. At the start of this piece I say two, but actually go ahead and review three, so just pretend I said a few, and then that won't be a typo, okay? I want to start by reviewing two iPhone apps that I'm hoping haven't been reviewed all over the place. I mean, we've all heard a million and one reviews of how great Chrome Rally is, which is very, by the way, just in case you're wondering, hadn't heard, lived on a different planet or something, or Super Monkey Ball, which is highly infuriating and made me almost throw my iPod away a few times. I'm absolutely useless at it and I really wish I hadn't spent the money on it because I can't get by the first stage. But anyway, I'll leave it at that. So I want to look at some apps that I use and that I absolutely love that I don't think I've heard talked about nearly as much. So I'm just going to start at the back of my screen here, and the first one I come across is Solitaire. It's just Solitaire. There's loads of different Solitaires, but the one I chose is the one called Solitaire. But nothing else. No bells or whistles. It does one thing, and it does one thing very well. The actual options you have within it are quite limited, but personally that doesn't really bother me. Basically, you can either draw three cards, one card at a time, and you can have sounds on or off, and that's it. That's your only options. Classic Klondike Solitaire, just the way I like it. Mind you, the main reason I chose it was I looked at the screenshot looked good, and the price looked very, very good at €1.59, which I guess is probably around about $2 or so with the modern exchange rates, or maybe 5 million, who knows. At first sight, you might be a little disappointed, because it's very straightforward. It is a green background with cards on it, and you drag them around and it does its magic. I guess the one thing that annoys me about it, and it's probably the only thing that actually annoys me about it, I thought other things would, but as a user I realised they don't. But anyway, the one thing that definitely annoys me about it is when I choose a new game, it actually lays out the cards in order, and you have to sit there and watch it animate out the cards. So it turns one, places six, turns another, places five, turns another, places four. It does it the whole way. And you're sitting there waiting for a few seconds. Come on, just give me a game. What I do like about it, that is fantastic, and so many solitaire games go wrong here, when you click the new game button, it doesn't just destroy your current game. It says, are you sure you really want to do that? And that's good, because the dashboard widget I have for solitaire doesn't do that, and the amount of times I've accidentally clicked on new game when I meant to click on, you know, show turn to deck again is far too many. It makes me very grumpy. This thing doesn't use the accelerometer, it doesn't use anything fancy, it's just a touch application. The thing is laid out always in portrait mode, which at first you might think is a bit odd because it means it has to be quite narrow, but when you think about how tall the cards get, it actually makes an awful lot of sense. So at the top you have your deck and your current three cards, and then next to that you have four slots for building up from your four aces. And then below that you have seven cards across, and then lots of room for them to go down as you stack them all up nicely. And at the bottom you just have a new game button. Literally everything is just done with the touch, and you can double click on something to send it up to where the aces are if there's room for it, which is nice. I thought it was going to be very fiddly. Let's say you have a big stack of cards somewhere and you want to take, say, you know, it goes from, say, 10 down to 2 and you want to take the 6 and move it somewhere else and everything below it. I thought that would get fiddly. And if you want to be really careful, you can do it fiddly-wise, because you can get to pick any card you like by slowly testing. But what I found is, There's no need to be fiddly with it. Just roughly grab the stack, dump it where you want it to go, and it will realise where it could possibly split, split it appropriately, and dump the cards over for you. So I used to be really careful when playing with it, and now I've just stopped being careful, and I just randomly pick and grab, and I have to say, I'm really impressed at how well it deals with that kind of treatment. I play a lot of it with my thumbs, and thumbs are really not particularly sensitive implements, and I do just fine with my thumbs. So, you know, if you're anyway careful at all, it works really well. So I was afraid it would be fiddly, but it's fine. I'm very happy with it. I was also afraid the numbers would be too small, but actually it's absolutely fine because the screen is such fantastic resolution. Yeah, the cards are small, but they're still really clear and easy to see. And actually, I've had more trouble with my dashboard widget I use for Solitaire than I have reading this. So, very good. The fives are very easy to distinguish from the sixes, which is the biggest potential downfall with these things, I find. So, really, I'm surprised I'm as happy with it as I am, because when I bought it, I figured, hey, €2, less than €2, why not? I'll give it a go, and if it doesn't work, I'll buy one of the expensive solitaires, because they go up very high in the iTunes store. They go up as high as, I think it's €8 or something, and it doesn't really do much more than what this one does. So I'm glad I didn't spend any more money, because it just works, and it's cheap. It's not free, but it's cheap. Okay, now we want to move on to perhaps a somewhat more practical app. Certainly more practical app if you're like me and you're an astronomer. So it's called StarMap, and it costs €9.99, so Lord only knows what that is in dollars, probably 5 million or something. Well, no, realistically, I guess it's 12 or 13. What it does is, in one sense, very, very straightforward. It shows you what the sky looks like right now, right where you are. Very useful. I've been an amateur astronomer for ages and ages and ages, and I've always wanted something with this kind of information that I could just have in my pocket at all times. The reality is, I don't go anywhere without my iPod. It is on my person at all times. So the iPod Touch is the perfect device for something I always have with me. So I'm delighted that they had one of these programs. It's actually the very first program I installed, even before games, which may have had more to do with the fact that games weren't working in the Irish store, but still, it was right up there at the top of my list of what I wanted. And I'm very happy with it. It is the most expensive app I've purchased, but I think it's worth it. So, you know, unexpectedly, when you fire it up, the first thing you see is a star map. Nothing too spectacular there. You see stars, you see constellations, you can see the outline of the Milky Way, you can choose to show a grid or not of the coordinate system. It shows the cardinal points along the horizon. You know, your usual, what you would expect to see for a little astronomy program. You can, of course, move around by dragging the screen. What's interesting is that this thing is very much at the limits of what the iPod Touch can do. There's a lot of maths going on here, a lot of number crunching, and the little CPU is having a fair bit of a workout here. And there's a lag. If I scroll across, it takes a second or so for the map to catch up with my finger. It's not really a problem, but it's interesting, I guess, that this is, you know, we're starting to see limits to what this little device can do. It's a great little device, but it's not perfect. What's particularly handy is that one of the menu options at the bottom is to have four buttons, north, south, east, and west. And when you click on those, it's quite snappy to jump you to the appropriate place, and it's a lot better to navigate using those buttons than dragging, or at least get yourself in the right general neck of the woods. You can also zoom in and zoom out by pinching, as you would expect. Now, what's interesting is the menu bar at the bottom. I haven't seen anything like this in any other app. Now, I don't know if that's because I simply haven't installed enough apps, which is possible, or whether it's because the guys who wrote this app invented this control, but it's bloody cool anyway. Along the bottom you have four buttons, and then you have a sort of a rounded looking knobbly bit that looks like something you would grip. So, looking like something I would grip, I run my finger across it, and it spins the menu bar. So imagine the menu bar is sort of a rectangular box, and so we see north, south, east, and west, and we spin it, and now we see four different buttons, and we spin it again, and we see four different buttons, spin it again, see four different buttons, spin it again, and we're back to where we started. So it's sort of a four-sided menu you roll around with this little grippy bit, which I have to say I think is exceptionally cool. So the north, south, east, and west are one of the more useful ones. Then another one you have is a simple search feature called Catalog. So you click on it and you start typing in. So let's say I want to see what the star Myra is. M-I-R-A. I must have spelled that wrong. Oh, apologies. A really nice thing, which it does by default, is that it only shows you things that are currently above the horizon. So if you want to find something that's below the horizon, you have to click the All button, and there Myra shows up straight away. And it shows me where it is, an arrow pointing into the ground, saying, it's way down there, mate. Okay, it doesn't show you what's below the horizon, as some astronomy programs do. It simply puts an arrow saying that away, which is fine. Then you have another button, Find Again. So if I move the screen around, and then I click Find Again, it should show me where Myra is again. Not really as useful. Particularly nice is the next button, which is Ephemeris, which basically is the little maths engine. So for all the planets and the sun and the moon, you can do a little bit of maths. So I'll set it to show me everything. So I'm going to click on the moon, and it tells me that the moon is currently a waning crescent. It's currently under the horizon in the constellation of Taurus. Its rise time is 12 minutes past midnight, and its setting time is 21 minutes past 5, which is 7 minutes ago. So I've only just missed it, but it has set. And it does the same for all the other planets, all the planets, and for the sun. And it doesn't seem to actually... Oh, no, it does include Pluto as a planet. Bold program. Anyway, the button next to that is meteors, and it knows about all the meteor showers. And by default, it just shows you the ones that are currently visible, which right now is the Alpha Cygnids and the Perseids. If I click on the All button, I can see how many meteor showers it knows about, and the answer is absolutely loads. Lots and lots and lots. If I roll the little thing around again, I get a little thing which tells me I can choose settings. Lots of things to change, actually. I'm quite impressed at how much you can change in the settings. An interesting button called Lamp. Turns it into a torch, but I can turn it into a red torch, or a white torch, or a red torch, or a white torch. Has its uses. The next one is called Brightness. It tells me just the brightness of sort of the way the sky is displayed. Nice. And then finally, Help, which is actually useful, because I actually had to use it for something. I don't remember what, but it was useful. Then, finally, on our last side of the bar, we have four buttons. One is Planets. If I click on that, it lists me all the planets that are currently above the horizon. I click on All, it just shows me all the planets. The next button is called Constellations. I can see either all the constellations or just the ones that are above the horizon. Then the next one is Stars. And it shows me all the stars that are currently above the horizon. Or I can ask it for all the stars, which is a lot. Now, at this point, I'm a little disappointed in this program. One imperfection I found. You know the way in the address book, or indeed in your list of podcasts, when you get too many of them, and it breaks down into an alphabetic list, you get the letters down the side so you can quickly jump to one? This doesn't do that. So if you want something starting in Z, you're going to have a sore thumb. Lots of scrolling to do. I'm sure they'll fix that in the later version, but it's a little annoying, and I did leave them some feedback on the iTunes store to that effect. The final button is then Deep Sky Objects, and I'm amazed it knows about an awful lot of them. Certainly enough, more than I'm going to see with a pair of binoculars, and enough for your average telescope on your average night. It gives you a nice good list, again broken down into either seeing them all, where the stuff that's below the horizon is greyed out, or only the visible. That toggle is everywhere, that visible or all toggle, and that's absolutely fantastic. It really makes things easier. So all in all, I'm very happy with it. It's, you know, it's just a tenner, and it works very well. It has those one or two little imperfections, but I think it's money well spent. Finally, I want to end with a little free app that I love so much that it's actually down on the bottom of those four icons that never move. It's called Zenbee. And it's basically for keeping lists. And really, this is what I've always been using the Notes app for. So I have a list called Shopping. And whenever I'm going somewhere, I have a list called Packing, or To Pack. Because I invariably remember loads of things I need to bring with me over the weekend on Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. And then when it comes to actually packing my bag on Thursday or Friday, I can't remember anything. And then I get home on Saturday, and suddenly it's like, oh, that's what I meant to bring. So it gets around that nasty problem. So literally, you just create lists, you add things to lists, and they appear with a little checkbox next to them. You click the checkbox, and they don't get deleted, they just get moved to the bottom of the list. Which is really handy for the shopping list, because I quite often have to buy cat food. So if it's checked, I just uncheck it, and it goes back up to the top of the list as something I still need. And I buy it, I check it off, goes back down to the bottom. Dead handy. Not without its flaws, though. The flaw that annoys me the most is that it's insanely slow to start up. I mean, I don't understand why something as simple as a couple of lists should take anything under an instant. But you get a big splash screen and you're waiting for ages. Now, you also get that from StarMap. But I sort of expect that for something that's loading loads of stuff into memory and doing loads of calculations. In the case of this thing, I don't get why it takes so long. But it does, and it's really annoying because you're standing in a shop going, oh, what do I need to buy? Click. Ah, finally, now I can see what I need to buy. Right, most annoying. The other really very, very, very silly thing, I would go first call it retarded, since that seems to be my catchphrase du jour, or du annum, whatever the Latin word is for a year, I think it's annum. Anyway, that's beside the point. The very bottom item on your list, always, 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 it's hidden below the bottom menu. That's just silly. Thankfully, the top item on the list doesn't get hidden below the top menu, because you have a menu at the top and a menu at the bottom. But the bottom item on your list is always hidden, so that's currently cat food, and I can't uncheck it, because if I scroll up, you know, on the bouncy scroll bars, I can't click on it while I'm doing that, and as soon as I let go, it goes back down and hides behind the thing. So I have to enter a new cat food next time I want cat food. Most annoying. Some nice things about it is that this thing ties into a web service. So you can use it standalone on the iPod Touch just fine. But there's a website, Zenbee, and if you go there, you set up a little account, and then you can synchronize that account with your iPod or your iPhone. So you can enter stuff on the web, or you can enter stuff on the iPhone and just hit the sync button so you can later get it back off the web or whatever. To me, it just seems like a nice little backup to have it go somewhere other than on my iPod. Because I don't trust that this thing is never going to need a restore, because we've seen lots of people have problems with the 2.0 software. So I probably am going to have to restore it, and I don't want to lose all my notes or all my shopping cart, because then I won't know what to buy. Anyway, that's three apps that I use by far the most often. I've bought a few other apps, but to be perfectly honest with you, I haven't used them a lot. And they're cool and I like them, but since they're not useful, I don't think there's that much point in my reviewing them. I mean, other people who do use them can review them, and that probably makes a lot more sense. Anyway, I'm going to leave it there for now, and let's get on with the rest of the show. Okay, in a slightly strange twist of events, I'm now the host of Chit Chat Across the Pond, and we're going across the pond the other way. So with me is crazy listener James, or James Kosis to give him his actual name, and it's only Alison calls him crazy. I don't, I think he's lovely. Anyway, how are you, James? Hi.
I'm lovely.
You're lovely.
not so crazy today.
Okay. No, we had a topic picked out, and then Apple went and said something interesting, so we sort of changed our mind a bit. Lots and lots of hints in the this week's earnings report about a mystery transition that's going to cut the margins by 4%. So we're just sort of wondering, what do we think they might be transitioning from what to what?
Yeah, and I think they're not going to be as big as everybody's expecting, but, I mean, you never know what's going to come from Apple, so we have our ideas.
Have you ever heard Apple say, and we're doing something small and insignificant?
people are expecting all these huge, I don't know. I know you have some of your ideas in terms of, like, tablets and all that stuff, and I see more, I don't know, you know, solid-state drives and some multi-touch stuff, but nothing huge, huge.
Yeah, I think probably the most obvious potential transition in the waiting is one that's already begun, which is going from hard disk-based iPods to all flash.
Which would be great. I mean, I have the 160-gig humongous, you know, black brick with, you know, my 30,000 tracks on it or whatever. And, I mean, if you're going to do that on a solid-state drive, it's going to be extremely expensive, and I'm not going to pay for it, so... We'll see how much capacity they can fit into the on a solid state drive.
Yeah, it really they need to at least hit the good 64 gigs. My iPod brick is probably even brickier than yours, because I don't know if you remember, for a while they had two different form factors. They had one with double platters and one with single platters.
Right, and it was a little bit thicker.
A lot thicker. A lot of my iPod accessories won't hold the bloomin' thing, but it's an iPod Photo 60 gig, and that's fine. That's big enough for me to get all of my music on. So I think they need to do at least 60. 120 would be nice, but I think 60 is sort of the bare minimum if they're going to go solid state.
And I think my standard platter-based iPod will last long enough until they can actually reach those huge capacities that... that I require.
I think mine is 5 years old, so I'm getting a little worried that's going to die one of these days. But so far, knock wood, it's been fine.
Yeah, I had the iPod Photo when it first came out. It was like a $600 iPod, and it died 2 or 3 years after I got it. Luckily, I had another one. So.
Yeah, at the moment it's just my iPod Touch, and that's 60 gig, and there's no way the Touch is big enough for me. 16 gigs is just not enough for all my stuff. Anyway, so that was one possibility. And the one I'm hoping for, which is probably why I put it in here next, is that I'm hoping that they move all of their laptops to LED screens.
Yeah, that would be really great. I mean, in terms of power consumption and environmental concerns.
And brightness. They're gorgeous. I mean, I do a lot of photography, and the MacBook Pro screen is starting to annoy me no end. It's the grays are too black. If you ever look on a calibration chart, it's like, perfect, 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 and then two blacks at the end. It's like,
Just be happy we're not on PCs where the gamma is, extremely dark and everything looks terrible.
That's a very good point. So I would like to see them do that, because it will give them the credentials of being able to say they're being green, which is, I think, no harm to see Apple be concerned about such things. And they're just better, like, you know, battery life and brightness and everything. So that'd be cool.
Yeah, that's definitely something that I can see them announcing in terms of, you know, not a huge, huge announcement, kind of an expected thing.
Yeah, because we've had plenty of rumors that there's a new MacBook Pro on the way out.
Yeah.
So, you know, laptop-related stuff, which I guess also ties into maybe taking the big MacBook Air trackpad with the multi-gestures and making that universal across the range.
That would be great. I mean, I have friends that really want to see everything touchscreen, and I just don't see that for things. I mean, maybe some things, but not, like, always. You know, I don't see myself sitting at an iMac touching the screen to type and my arms getting extremely tired.
Exactly.
Things like that.
It's what I come across quite a few people who say, no, I want everything touchscreen. I said, okay, hold your hands out for 5 minutes. Then talk to me again. Strangely, they suddenly change their mind after 5 minutes. I don't know why. But yeah, it's touchscreen, everything is not practical. But the idea of having the multi-touch on the trackpad is genius.
Definitely.
So it'd be nice to see if that goes everywhere. I think, do you want to pick a next one that you have in mind?
Oh, what were mine? I can't even remember.
Well, there's one there you mentioned, the cloud.
Yeah, like more of a cloud-based, I guess, filing system. Maybe they want to get further into cloud computing, which would be kind of cool. I'm just concerned about bandwidth. I mean, that's the major limitation right now, is just getting your ISP to allow you to, you know, do that much work online, and having having them allow you enough speed to make those large file transfers for video or music or images.
Yeah, around here it's ADSL country, and A stands for asynchronous, and upload speeds here are disastrous. So it would just never work around these parts. I mean, I have 3 megs down, but I have 384K up. I couldn't do video editing in the cloud.
No,
it just couldn't.
It's too much right now. You know,
but
maybe
a new
technology might be needed for that much speed.
Yeah, but would you trust Apple to do anything in the cloud? I mean, they can't even keep Mobile Me up. They couldn't keep .Mac up.
But at least they're telling us now, like, you know, they're giving us daily reports.
Yeah, it's
about
still crap. No, it's I'm very disappointed, because the only thing that was ever really wrong with .Mac was that it didn't work as advertised, and Mobile Me is exactly the same. They just have not learned the lesson. So I wouldn't trust them in cloud computing. They have to build up a track record of at least a year without losing people's email before I'm going to trust them with anything.
Yeah, I hear that.
What else? I have on my list then entering the sub-$1,000 laptop market.
That would be great.
And that would involve a cut in your margins.
So. Yeah, and it seems like they're willing to kind of take that hit.
Yeah, which would be very interesting. As long as it was still Apple quality for a cheap price. I mean, I'm a huge fan of the Mac Mini, which is sort of Apple's brief sort of toe in the water in that neck of the woods, which it's sort of their forgotten child. They never mention it in any big events. It just sort of exists. And every year we get rumors it's going to be removed, but thankfully it keeps existing.
It's either going to be removed or they're going to have a big revision to it.
You know there happens, though. It's just there.
Yeah, nothing ever. Didn't they have a sub-$1,000 notebook? Wasn't the iBook like $999, if you can call that sub-$1,000?
Yeah, I know in Ireland, if you take the educational discount into account and you go sub-€1,000 on the MacBooks, on the very low-end MacBooks. But that's not really what I mean, though. I'm talking, you know, a $500 laptop from Apple. That would be sweet.
That would be unbelievable.
Yeah, don't think it's going to happen, but it will be cool.
Yeah, I don't. They really don't want to compromise quality, and you know, $500 is. I don't think you're going to get the quality that they're, wanting to deliver to their customers. So, we'll see.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Very interesting. Then you have one in there that I hope you're wrong about. Nuking the PowerPC is what you had on your list.
Yeah. And just to, you know, piss me off, it's like, let's just get rid of, you know, well, maybe that'll be like the final transition, you know, no more PowerPC, all Intel, and James is, you know, screwed with, you know,
not just
all the
James,
money he's put in.
Bart as well. I am very, very, very happy with my Joule G5 at work. I do not want to lose that machine.
Not at all. My computer is just, you know, I put too much into it and it kicks too much butt.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to lose it.
Yeah, so. But I don't see how that would cut into their bottom line, into their margins. So I think we can optimistically say that's not going to happen until Snow Leopard.
Yeah, or you know, I don't know. I think Snow Leopard will still run on it, but I might be hopeful. But I mean, I know it doesn't right now in terms of the developer's kits.
Yeah, that doesn't mean it definitely won't. But right. If they're talking about shrinking the size of all the apps, that sounds to me like they're going to. I mean, there's the nickname for a universal binary used to be a fat binary.
Yeah.
So if they're talking about slimming down Leopard, then that strikes me as meaning no more fat binaries.
Oh, well, I guess I'll have to get a new computer.
Yeah, but that's a year away yet. And there's still going to be support for Leopard for at least another year or two after that. So 3 years, you're probably due one by then.
Okay, yeah, definitely by 3 years.
32 core or something.
Exactly.
Okay, and then the last thing I had down, which is pure optimism on my behalf, is that they're going to start moving towards big tablet-y things. But again, that's pure optimism. I don't really see any signs that that's happening.
Yeah, unless, I don't know, just in terms of an on-screen keyboard, I don't see people being too happy with that. Having to learn gestures and things like that would be
if it's good
weird.
Enough for Captain Picard, it's good enough for me. But no, I mean, I love the iPod Touch, and I do a lot with it, but I would do more with it if it was just an A5 size. That's all I want, just A5.
You mean letter size?
No, A5, not A4. No, I'd be happy with A5. A4 would be cool, but less portable.
I guess we'll have to, you know, us Americans will have to deal with the A5 size.
Well, you can call it half letter if you prefer. Because it's half A4, and A4 is about letter, isn't it? All I know is letter just messes up my printer all the time. Everything wants to print letter, and the printer can't take letter, and bloody Americans.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Anyway, so we should probably move on to what was going to be our real topic, which was sort of our... You know, what we sort of really, really hope Apple would do, our sort of big wish list for Apple futures, which is, I guess, sort of dovetails nicely into this transition talk. But, you know, forget about the transition and just say what we really want all in all. So I'll let you go first, because you have loads of stuff here.
I mean, I don't know. I've been thinking about this for about a year now, and I really want to see Apple create a nice digital picture frame. It seems like there's no good digital picture frames out there. They all have really terrible screens. It's hard to get stuff onto them and set up. And I just see Apple coming in to save the day, similar to how they saved the day with MP3 players. Because when Apple entered the MP3 player market, I was like, are you guys crazy? Like, what's the why? You know, and my mindset at that time was thinking about all the Rio player and all the other terrible MP3 players. And, you know, I couldn't wrap my brain around why Apple would want to enter that market. But now we see why. I mean, they knew exactly where it could go.
Yeah.
You know, they saw that that industry really needed help. And it's the same thing with digital picture frames. They're moving more into the home market and wanting to kind of be that, you know, full solution for your home. And I just see a lot of really cool features with it.
Yeah, I mean, I could imagine a nice, shiny, glossy Apple display hanging up on my wall with a nice minimalist frame around it and my pictures on it. I mean,
In terms of frame, I was even thinking a frameless one where you could, you know, it has maybe a mat, you know, around it, and then you're able to use any frame that you want, and it has some kind of mounting system to use any frame that will go with your home, because a lot of the ones that are out there now are just ugly or they don't fit the style of your home.
Yeah, a lot of them are really ugly, and matte screens just ruins it for me. It's like, that's quite clearly not a photograph, that's quite clearly a digital picture frame.
Yeah.
I've yet to see a nice one. But I can imagine a nice glossy screen if it was really, really thin or something as well, so that maybe you could have, you know, those frameless frames? If we just have a white band around the edge and there's no actual frame, it's just a sheet of glass and your stuff. Yeah. If it could end up looking like that, you know, minimalist Apple style, because that'll go with anything.
And then the other things I had, you know, the other ideas I had for it would, you know, obviously be networked. You could probably get away with 802.11g instead of N might be a little bit of overkill.
Yeah, how big are your pictures? Or are you imagining this as an A0 frame? Or
the giant wall of photo. You know, obviously the card slots if you still want to go that route. But I was thinking more of an RSS feed or, you know, a me.com gallery feed, you know, or, you know, the photo cast you can do from iPhoto.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then maybe an iPhone and iPod dock.
Yeah, if you're thinking about it, like, what you really want a digital picture frame for is to give pictures to Granny or whatever. So if you could have it so that it would connect to your mobile Me gallery, so you just dump pictures up there and they magically appear in Granny's sitting room.
Exactly, exactly. Make it super easy to set up. And then, you know, obviously a really good high-res screen, because the screens on the current ones that you see around are just, you know, really terrible. It's like a screen door. You're looking at a screen door.
Yes, that's it, exactly.
And then like the transitions that the current ones use, it's like right out of a PowerPoint.
Yeah, and that's not a compliment.
And then the last, my last little dream for this product would be kind of like networked iTunes visualizer. So if you're playing music through AirTunes, you can have all of your picture frames around your house do the visualizer, including the your Apple TV.
That'd be weird. It'd be cool, yeah. But it'd be just weird. Yeah, nice idea, though. Now, what I would hope is that you could actually look at it and have to ask yourself, is that real or is that a digital picture frame?
Yeah, that would be.
Because I've certainly never had to ask myself that. It's like, ah, that's clearly a digital picture frame. Yeah. Anyway.
And if you could look at it 1 second and see one photo and be like, oh, that's a nice photo. And then you look back and it's a different photo. You're like,
what the?
What the?
Anyway, so I suppose we'll nip to one on my list. Seems only fair. Oh, look, see what's at the top of my list. I want an A5 tablet computer, please. No, I'm obsessed with this completely, totally and utterly. I want my tablet, and I have for absolutely donkey's years, and I still do. And every year we hear rumors that Apple are working on a Mac tablet, and every year they're not true. But one of these days, it's going to happen. One of these decades.
I already like my Mac tablet. It's called an iPhone.
Yeah, but it's too small. Bigger. Anyway, I'm a little intrigued by the one you have next on your list. Better remote app for iPod, iPod, or iPhone, iPod Touch.
I
current one.
I love
it's
it.
Fantastic.
I love it too.
So
it just doesn't have the functionality of the Apple remote, which I'm sure they did on purpose because you have to pay for the Apple remote. Unless you have a product that came with it. But yeah, just being able to navigate the menus is kind of like, hello, no brainer. I mean, I'm able to do that with Remote Buddy, which I loved up until this one came out, because this one is kind of a killer for that, except for the lack of you know, Apple Remote functionality in terms of arrow keys and menu button and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And the other one is I'd love to be able to shut down my machine remotely.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the ideal would be that you could, you know, put the Mac at the end of the bed, get into bed, watch a movie, and then from your iPod Touch, make it go to sleep, and then you go to sleep.
And then the other thing, I don't know if the remote application does this already, but launch iTunes for you. Like if it's not launched. I don't know if it does that. Actually, I meant to test that earlier today, but I forgot.
It doesn't, we want it, because I agree with you there.
That'd be great.
And if it does, we're happy. What have I next on my list? I want movies, TV shows, and rentals in Ireland. This, again, is one of those things that I have been expecting for years, and they just don't seem to care about us Irish people, because I want an Apple TV, but really, with no content, what's the point? So, they just won't sell us content. It's just the UK and France, I think, at the moment, here in Europe, and they keep on talking about European rollouts, and Europe seems to count as being the UK or something.
The UK or everything other than Ireland.
Well, it's really, I think it's just the UK and France at the moment. Maybe Germany have a few now as well, but it's exceptionally, exceptionally limited. And you'd think at least the 22 countries that got the iPhone would get TV shows and stuff, but no. So I keep on wishing for that. And it's one, I guess, that's very Ireland-centric, because you guys are used to all that stuff, but I just like it.
I think it'll happen. It's just a matter of time, and unfortunately, you've been waiting so long, it just seems, you know, like it's never going to happen, but
yeah,
it'll happen.
Yeah. Anyway, what's next on your list?
Next on my list is another crazy one. This one was a little bit of like a filler one, but it would be nice. I mean, I don't know how much of a market there is for it. It would be Apple Home Automation. So, you know, things like controlling your lights and, you know, I don't know, a million other things. Your climate control or your garage door or any of that stuff. You know, set it up similar to how you would set up an automator application. You know, you just drag stuff in and order and create macros. And then, of course, you can schedule it via your iPhone or your iPod Touch or over the internet, and control stuff via your iPhone as well. Like, if you didn't schedule something to happen and you pull up to your home, you can turn your porch light on and turn your living room light on. So
I just had a great idea. Imagine if it also tied in with the iPhone's location devices thingy. So as you come around the corner approaching your house, it can open the garage door and turn on the lights for you.
Yeah. I mean, and like on special occasions, you can have it, you know, sense your proximity, and as you're pulling around the corner, it shoots off fireworks and blare, you know, classical music or something like that.
Happy birthday to you. Yeah, yeah. It could be handy for anniversaries.
Or Fridays.
Or Fridays. Yeah, that's good enough, actually. It's a good enough reason to celebrate. What had I next on my list? Yeah, this is actually, in a way, something I'm sure they're going to do. I mean, this rumored new MacBook Pro, I'm sure, is going to have a hard disk you can actually get at. I had no idea when I ordered my MacBook Pro that I wasn't going to be able to change the hard disk. Because if I had, I would not have got one with an 80 gig hard drive.
Right.
I would have rammed as much hard drive into it as I possibly could. And now it's basically, there's 80 gigs in it, and that seems to be the way it's going to stay. Apparently, it's a huge job to take these things apart just to get out a hard drive. So,
yeah, I remember the iBooks were the same way.
Yeah. So I really hope that the next MacBook Pro is as easy to get out the hard drive as the MacBook, because I think, you know, a Pro machine surely should be easier to upgrade than a non-Pro cheap consumer machine.
Or they just want to see how Pro you really are.
It's a test. Yes. No, I think it's just that the MacBook Pro is basically a PowerBook with an Intel chip. I mean, the design is actually very old.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that they do that, and they also give us an LED screen, and they give us, you know, proper big touchpad with the gestures and all that kind of stuff. That, you know, that'd make me very happy. I'd then have to go find $3,000 to buy a new one, but it'd make me very happy to know it was out there. Yeah. And finally, Jesus, your ones are going from unlikely to more unlikely. What have we got next?
This one is most definitely filler. So an automobile entertainment server, which is essentially an iPod, but I guess an iPod on steroids. You know, other kind of fantastic ideas I have for this product would be Apple to make their own head unit, so you don't have to use some third party that really doesn't get it. But, you know, I really don't see that happening. But another cool feature I had for this product, which would be really cool, is that it's, you know, it's essentially an iPod, but you can just leave it in your car. So when you pull up into your driveway, it just connects to your Wi-Fi and syncs that way. You don't have to take it out and worry about, it shows up like an Apple TV, except it's, instead of the picture of the Apple TV, it's like a picture of your car.
Yeah, that would actually be very cool. No, that would be cool. I don't see it happening, but it'd be very cool. Although it does really mean the chance that your car could get hacked halfway up the road and end up with really bad music in your eardrums.
Exactly.
Which wouldn't be good. And I think, finally, yeah, my last thing on my wish list, I put it there more tongue-in-cheek than anything else, something like Mobile Me, but that actually works. I mean, the concept is fantastic. It was the same with .Mac. If they could only make it reliable, if they could only make it quick, because over here in Europe, iDisk access is so, so slow. So I had these great notions of using my iDisk for everything, but it just ain't going to happen. It's really annoying.
I know. It really is. I just started using Dropbox as kind of an addition to iDisk, and it's just like a folder on your hard drive. You just do anything with it. You know, you don't have to log in and all this stuff. Once your computer is synced, it's kind of like you have access to every file that's in there, and I love it.
It sounds really good, actually. I must give that a go, because that's really what I want from .Mac. I want iDisk to work, and I want calendar syncing. And at this stage, I'm looking into using Google Calendars or something and using something like Dropbox and saying, to hell with all this Mobile Me stuff, because it's just really aggravating and frustrating.
Yeah. If you guys don't know what Dropbox is, you can check it out at getdropbox.com.
Cool. I will definitely check that out.
I do have a couple of invites, so at the end of this, we'll give my email address and people can email me for an invite.
You sure that's wise? Why don't you get them to email Allison for an invite, and then Allison can pass it on to you? Because there's no way I'm giving out my email address. I've said that.
My email address is everywhere.
Is it? Oh, fair enough. In that case, giveaway. I don't want to stick it in the show notes, because then it'll be crawled by nasty web bots.
Yeah.
Okay, do you have anything else to add before we wrap this up?
Oh, I don't know. I'm just really eager to see what comes out in the next few months. It's going to be exciting. I mean, already this past few years have been really exciting to be a Mac user. I've been using Macs, you know, since they've been out, and it's just a wonderful time to be a Mac user.
Yeah, the only thing I would say to that is that in some ways the fun has gone out of it a little, because it always leaks out beforehand what's coming, whereas it used to be complete and utter mystery.
Yeah.
But it's no, still, I'm looking forward to the September-ish event where they're going to launch all the cool goodies for Christmas. That's always good fun.
Yes, absolutely.
Okie dokie. Thank you very much, James, for giving us your time and putting in so much work into our little preparation and stuff. And until next time, happy computing, I think I'm supposed to say, or something like that. Anyway, bye-bye. And with that, my first NoscillaCast comes to an end. Aw, how sad. Anyway, I hope I haven't utterly destroyed Alison's fantastic podcast. I hope you've enjoyed my probably slightly more amateurish style. It's going to be extended to the show notes, because unlike Alison, who carefully writes out everything she's going to say and then reads it back expertly, I don't do that because I prefer economy of effort, which is a nice way of saying I'm lazy. Anyway, long story short, the show notes will be skeleton notes. Until next time, happy computing!